Accession number 23230, Reel 1.
Mr. Kenneth Taylor, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Taylor?
I was born in Stretford, which is a suburb of Manchester, in 1920.
And could you tell us a little about your background, your childhood, your family background?
Well, I remember that we lived in a park. There were some houses in Longford Park, I think, and we lived there. It was a terrace house, and we were in the end one. And then, I suppose, when I was about 5 or 6, we moved further away into Chalton-cum-Hardy. No, West Isbury, which is a rather posh suburb of Manchester.
And what did your father do for a living?
Well, my father was a stationer, a printer and stationer, and but he started life as a youngster in the Merchant Navy, and I've got papers upstairs whereby he signed on as an apprentice, and his salary was £120 a year, but had his food and keep as well. As he grew older, he was eventually became a master mariner, and he was on the old clippers, you know, sailing and all the rest of it. So when the first war came along, he volunteered and was put in the army. And I remember he was in the cavalry, and I know we used to go on holidays sometimes, and he used to say, "Oh, I remember this place because this is where we used to water the horses." But eventually he got into the Navy, and he was on a minesweeper. And it's rather strange that my life is rather similar to his in the fact that he was in the Navy in the First World War, and he was based on the minesweepers in Grimsby, where he met my mother, and they got married. And after the war, he went back into the printing business. And I was brought up, we moved to West Didsbury, and there I went to lower minor public school, the William Hume School. And
how did you do at school?
I suppose I was about average. Yes, I would say I was average, and I was a bit ahead of my time. In those days, they had matric and school certificate. I didn't get the matric, but I got a school certificate. And I remember I was a year too young to take it, but the result was that when I'd taken it, I was still obliged to stay on another year. And I stayed on for the other year, but I didn't go on to the second year to get the entrance to university, because I wanted to go into Civil Street. Right, and then when I left school at, I think it was 15 or perhaps 16, I went to Manchester College of Technology on a printing course. And from there on, when I was about 18, I suppose, I went into the family firm, and then when I was 19, the war broke out, and I volunteered to join the Navy. Mainly because of my father's background.
I'll come. What did you do in the family printing firm?
I was in the printing section, doing estimates mainly, and quotations.
Did you enjoy the work?
I suppose so, yes.
And what about any outside interests? Were you interested in sport?
Oh, yes, I was in sport. I used to play lacrosse for Manchester University, because the technical college was part of the university. Yes, that was the main thing. I was always interested in football. I never played it, because we did rugby and lacrosse at school.
And what about any other hobbies? Were you in any of the boys?
No, we had at school we had what do you call it, cadet corps, but I wasn't interested in that. if they'd had a similar thing, the Navy Cadet Corps, I probably would have been, but the Army didn't grab me at all.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? Do you remember the day war broke out?
Oh, very well indeed, yes. I think we all prayed for peace, and I went to the printing business, which was just opposite the Manchester Cathedral. And on that day, I went to the cathedral and prayed for peace, but, 11 o'clock, that was it. We were at war.
How did you feel?
Well, I was young. I had no fears at all, really. It was war, and that was it. And but I was very careful that I didn't want to be in the Army, and I volunteered for the Navy.
And now, tell me about volunteering. When did you volunteer?
Oh, immediately the war broke out. That would be, was it November?
It broke out in September.
September, then. Well, October, I suppose. I suppose I thought about it a bit.
And where did you go to join? What was the process of volunteering?
Well, I went to the recruiting office and told them what I did and all the rest of it, and they put me down as a supply assistant. And I went to Butlins, which was then King Royal Arthur, which was a holiday camp which had been turned into a naval training camp.
Now, what was your first sort of reception when you arrived at HMS Royal Arthur?
I remember it very well. Had a medical, and then we were kitted out, and I remember going to this big room where the piles of uniforms, and you stood in a gangway, and a bloke at the other end looked at you and said, "Right, size so and so." And they chucked the trousers and the jacket, because supply assistants weren't in naval rig, it was trousers and, and jacket. And then we did the usual training, marching up and down and all the rest of it.
How did you settle in with the others? I mean,
oh, absolutely fine. A nice crowd of chaps, and I enjoyed it. But I was only there for, I think, about 4 weeks.
Well, hang on a bit. What was your accommodation like there? Were you in
chalets? Oh, in chalets, yes, yes.
What do you remember of them? What were they like?
Oh, well, there was just two to a chalet, and it was very nice, really.
You don't remember them much?
Oh, yes, I remember them very, very well. There was just there were two bunks, one above the other, and a wash basin, and that was it.
And they heated?
I can't remember, quite frankly. I don't remember feeling. But it was, by the time I was called up, it was spring anyway. So I probably wasn't heated, but didn't need it.
Sorry, I've got this a bit wrong. I thought you joined up in October 39.
No, I volunteered then.
But you were called up.
I was called up, probably February, March.
And what about, if you take go through sort of during this period of basic training, if we have a look at sort of how the training went through a typical day, about what day would you start? This is at Skegness, wasn't it? Nora?
Skegness, that's right, yes.
What time would your day start? What would you do during the day? A typical day.
I know we did a lot of square bashing.
Well, tell me about that. How did you take to drill?
All the teachers were old petty officers, real old salts, and they used to tell us all sorts of stories. But I can remember signalling was the big thing there. You marched along in a troop, and somebody said red 9. You put your hands up, and then you turn to the left, you see, and that's all I remember, really. I tell you what, we didn't have any training whatsoever for the job I was going into, the supply side, none whatsoever.
Had they told you when you arrived you were going to be a supply assistant?
Yes.
And
I didn't really know what that was.
And so after the first month there, that would be sort of March, April, round about then.
That's right. Well, the next thing that happened was we were told to pack, and we got on a train, and we went to Pathelli, which became later a battling thing. But at that time, we were on the train all day to get there. And then when we got there, we had to take our kit out, put it onto hand carts, and there were also hand carts there with tents. So I forget, it was light until dark, but I know we had to tramp about a couple of miles to a field, and there we had to set up these tents, and that was our quarters for the next few weeks. And we had to dig latrines. And one thing I do remember is that the latrines, they had a sort of a canvas shield around them, and they were just sort of pieces of wood with holes in the middle, and you sat all together, and you overlooked the railway line. And of course, the canvas screen didn't last long, and we used to be doing our little bits and pieces and wave to the people as the trains went by. This is quite funny.
Now this was, I think it was HMS Glendower, Pafeli was called.
I don't remember, quite frankly.
And you got there about April, you reckon?
Oh, probably April, May.
And what about your training there? What were you training as there? What sort of training were you on?
Well, just the usual. I can't remember. We had any serious training. We should march about and do the red 9 and blue 9 and all the rest of it. And there was absolutely no training as what I was going to be a supply assistant. Absolutely nothing. And I don't know how long we were at Pafeli, probably 3 or 4 weeks. And then I was drafted to Devonport. And I still remember my number, which was DMX67007. Funny how you remember some things and forget others.
Now, so that you get there about May, June. So.
Yes, I remember. Probably you can put a proper date to it, because I would tell you this. When I got to Devonport, in the barracks there, I was put in the clothing store. And I remember that it must have been about the fall of France, because we had a lot of French sailors coming in to be kitted up.
So you probably got there about May.
I would think so, yes.
Now, what were your duties in the clothing store?
Well, the people used to come in, and I used to look at them and decide what size they were and hand the stuff over.
That's all you had to do?
That's all I had to do, yes.
What kit did you hold? What uniform did you hold?
Well, we had the bell-bottom suits and the trousers and jacket for the writers, cooks, supply people. They all had, I used to call it, it had a special name. Was it 4 and a half, Vig or something? Yeah, I don't know.
And that was all you held. You didn't hold kit. You just held the basic uniforms.
Oh yes, yeah. Well, and underwear and stuff like that, which was standard.
Now, what else were you doing when you were at Devonport Barracks?
Nothing else there. Basically, we were sent there and we were given a job to do while we were waiting for a draft to a ship.
And what was the drafting procedure when you got your draft?
I think somebody gave me a sheet of paper with instructions on it, what to do with a travel warrant, and you'll laugh at this. My first draft was back to Skegness, where I was in the clothing store again, as ship's company. And we had quite a few privileges there, because we didn't have to mess ourselves. We had a mess, but the food was served by Vens and all the rest of it. So really, we had a cushy time.
Now, how long had you been at Devonport? Was that just a month or two?
Just a month or two, yes.
And so you got to Skegness around about June, July?
Yeah, I suppose so, yes.
It was summer, high summer.
Oh, yes.
And how were you just doing this clothing store? Anything happen?
No, I know I was in a chalet with a writer. Seems a funny thing to rank to be a writer, you know, as if something special about writing. But I don't know if it's the same today, but there are people called writers who are in the office. Writers.
And so it was just a period of routine. How long did that go on for?
No, I'm honestly, I suppose I was there for about 6 months.
And what happened next?
Oh, next I had a draft back to Devonport, and I was there in the clothing store for about 10 days, and I got a draft to HMS Viscount.
Now, do you know when you joined HMS Viscount? That would pin something down.
I think, I'm not quite sure, by the end of 1940 or the beginning of 1941. I can't be
sure. So if we said round about January 1941.
I would say so, yes, I'm not quite sure.
And can you describe the Viscount firstly?
Yes, well, I should say that...
It's a V-class destroyer.
V&W-class destroyer, yes. And she was in Devonport Dockyard, and the V&Ws were originally in the First World War fleet destroyers. But with the shortage of escort ships for convoys, many of them, or most of them, were converted to long-range escort vessels, which entailed taking two boilers out and getting rid of the torpedoes and basically being converted for escort duty. And when I joined the Byron, the Viscount, she was in dock being converted. And all they had on board was a C&M party. There were no officers on board. There was a coxswain, a chief stoker, a chief ERA, and a buffer. And myself. We were the only ones on board.
You were part of the advance party.
That's right, yes. And this is rather interesting because I was a supply assistant. I was bunged onto this destroyer, and as far as I remember, there wasn't a supply bloke there who I took over from. I was just bunged in there, and I think the coxswain said, "Hey, Jack," because everybody was called Jack Dusties in those days on the supply side. He said, "I'll take you down and show you around." And aft, I had a lovely little office with stores in it and all the rest of it, but I had a desk and all sorts of books, and then I had a store forward, but you know, I didn't know anything about it. I mean, nobody, I'd never had any training for this job, but in front of me on the desk there were about four ledgers. And in these ledgers were all sorts of things that I didn't know what they were. And the foggiest idea. And anyway, things progressed and I just lounged about, really, basically, until it became serious and we were told that we were going to commission. And what I did was I was in charge of all the Wellingtons, paint, all sorts of tools, gloves, blankets. And what I basically did was to go through these ledgers, and if I didn't know what it was, I'd make out a requisition for it. And I spent a lot of time doing this, ordering stuff, and having a word with the buffer, seeing what he wanted in the way of know, hawsers and ropes and all the rest of it. And it was pathetic, really, because nobody told me anything about it. I just had to do it all my own. Well, the consequence was that you made out a requisition, and then you got a handcart and a couple of matelots, and you went to these various stores, filled it up, and came back to the ship. And the paperwork, you see, you had chits for all this stuff. And I just put all of these things and put them in a box, an apple box. And when one was full, I started another. And I had to order binoculars and things like that. And anyway, we did the running up trials, and we were told that we were going to be based with an escort group in Liverpool. And we did trials, and I was dishing stuff out. you know, it seemed to work all right. And nobody's asked for something that I hadn't got. But when we got to Liverpool, I was in my office, and it was a hatchway and a ladder going into the office. I was in my office one day, and I saw a pair of legs coming down, obviously an officer, and it was a warrant supply officer. And he was a sour-faced bastard. And he said, "Hello, Taylor, what are you doing?" And he said, "You know, how are you getting on?" I said, "Oh, absolutely fine, no problems at all." And then he spotted these apple boxes. And he said, "What's all this?" I said, "Well, that's all the notes for the stuff I've got, and I haven't had time to enter it up yet into the ledgers." He said, "My lad, you've got to do that." He said, "When you come back after your first trip, I'll be waiting for you." So the net result was, on the first convoy we did, I was spent a lot of time in all weathers trying to get the paperwork up to date, which I managed to do, and he was quite happy when we got back. But I must say that I never had any training whatsoever.
Now, what about your actual accommodation on the ship? Where were you? What was your mess deck?
When we were under the C&M party, I was in the petty officer's mess. When we commissioned, I was in the stoker's mess. But when we were in harbour, of course, I had my office and I had a camp bed down there, and one of these wash basins, you know, where you have a can of water at the back and old-fashioned things. And, so really, in harbour, I was quite comfortable.
But what was the stoker's mess like?
Actually, they're all very nice chaps. I got on well with them. Oh, of course, they liked me because I didn't have a watch, you see. And I was quite a dab hand at making apple pies and things like that, doing the cooking. Because in those days, we had the messing, or the messing arrangements were quite primitive.
That was under the canteen mess system.
Canteen messing, yes.
Can you describe what it was, the canteen messing system?
Yes, canteen messing was, you had some basic rations handed out to you, and you had, I think, a few pence a day to buy things from the canteen. But basically, on the V&Ws, they didn't have any refrigerators, and all the fresh provisions and meat and stuff was carried on the upper deck where it was with a bit of air. And of course, after a week or so, you'd be down to sort of basic tinned beef and hits. Do you know what hits are? Herrings in tomato sauce. And they were the most unpopular thing that Navy ever had. And anybody who did a stock taking, they always had far more hits than they should have done, and other things were far less. But I rather like herrings in tomato sauce.
What sort of meals would you cook up for the stokers? Because you had a cook of the day, didn't you?
That's right, yes. But I used to... I mean, I had no watch, you see. Unless somebody wanted something, I was sort of a passenger. So, you know, I did some, you know, more than my fair share of looking after the grub for the mess.
So what would you cook for them? Were you any good at cooking?
Oh, no, I didn't actually cook myself. On the Viscount, there was a galley, a coal-fired galley, and it only went the width of the ship. And all the messes used to have a metal, what do you call it, metal?
Sort of Dixie-like thing. Dixie or...
Well, large thing. And if you wanted roast potatoes, you peel the potatoes, and took them up and told the cook you wanted roast potatoes, and you had some meat there, and that was done. And basically, that was it. You had to take the food, which you'd all prepared, and just take it up to the galley.
That's what I mean. What food would you prepare for them? Just, sorry, I see what you mean. But
well... There was corned beef and fresh meat for a few days, and after that it was corned beef and hits and that sort of thing. And of course, if we were at sea and we did a depth charge, then a lot of fish came up and we had some fresh fish. And it had been known for us just to drop a depth charge just to get the fish.
So what was your sort of daily routine like for you on the
Well, out? My daily routine at sea was dead easy because I didn't have anything to do, basically. Sling your hammock and get up, and I used to sort of swan about, you know. But if it was calm, I'd go down to my office and wait till somebody wanted something.
And what about the hammock? How did you take to hammocks?
Oh, absolutely marvellous.
What was so good about them?
Well, you didn't notice the swing and the sway of the ship. The ship would sway, but the hammock would stay where it was. And it's far better. I'd much rather sleep in a hammock than a bunk at sea.
Did you have any trouble with seasickness?
No, none whatsoever.
Now, anything happened on the first convoy? That'd be in sort of early spring,
well,
41, or?
I should say that everybody had an action station.
What was your action station?
Well, initially I was just on the supplies, the team that passed ammunition up to the guns. But after that I was put on the plot.
So tell us about the first one first. So what about when you were on the gun?
I wasn't on the gun.
I mean on the ammunition team.
Well, the ammunition was down below and the shells used to be passed up by hand through hatches and so forth up to the guns. The guns had a ready supply, but when that had gone, of course, they relied on people bringing it up to them.
Which guns were they? The 4-inch, 6-inch?
I think they were 4-inch. 4-inch.
So that was that. And then what about your work on the plot? What did that entail?
Well, that was very good, actually, in the beginning, because it was all very primitive. We didn't even have a gyro repeater in the plot. Now, the plot was next to the wheelhouse, and it was a chart room and plot. And when we closed up for action stations, the ASDIC section was, you know, underneath the bridge, and we had to plot literally with a ruler and a pencil and a pair of calipers. And we had to know what course the ship was taking. So at action stations, if we were already at action station, I would yell out, "Coxswain, ship's head, you know, 270 or wherever it was." And, you know, I knew the revs, you know, if there was a change of revs, I could hear it. But it was all very primitive. How it worked, I don't know, but it seemed to.
Now, was there any actual engagements during the first convoy?
No.
Where were you going?
Oh, our usual trip was going to Argentia in Newfoundland.
What were the trips like? Can you describe the sort of routine trip to Argentia?
Well, usually it would take, I think it would take 10 or 12 days, according to the speed of the convoy. And as far as I know, that the first trip was uneventful. I can't remember the name of the convoy.
So it was very much a routine thing.
Oh, very much a routine thing, yes.
And of course you were busy doing your ledgers most of the time.
Well, for the first trip, yes.
But nothing else that you run toward?
No. I can't remember when, but on one occasion, it must have been some time later, months and months later, because once we were in dock, and this queer thing was fitted above the bridge almost like a lighthouse. And it was the first primitive radar.
Was it very secret?
Very hush-hush. Very hush-hush. Nobody knew what it was.
How was it used then? I mean, was its information passed to the plot? Or?
Let me see. I'm not quite sure where the it was called Vader. I'm not quite sure. I think the bloke actually sat in this lighthouse and yelled through a voice pipe to the bridge. And I remember there was a screen and a little handle. And he used to turn the handle and move it. And there was a blip. And according to where the blip was, you could guess the approximate range of something that was there.